The headlines: former U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy blasts what he calls institutional problems in Congress after being voted out of his job in an unprecedented move. German protesters rally against Berlin's military assistance to Ukraine, saying arms supply to Kiev risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. And Britain's National Health Service leaders express concerns over the ongoing strike action in England by junior doctors and consultants. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy has been ousted in a historic vote triggered by a group of his fellow Republicans. A group led by Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida has been highly critical of McCarthy's leadership ever since he was elected House Speaker in January. His ouster has now plunged Congress into further chaos just days after it averted a government shutdown.
A historic vote in the U.S. House of Representatives, the lower chamber of Congress, voted to remove Kevin McCarthy as Speaker following a motion pushed by his fellow Republicans.
On this vote, the yeas are 216, the nays are 210. The resolution is adopted. Without objection, the motion to reconsider is laid on the table. The office of Speaker of the House of the United States House of Representatives is hereby declared vacant.
Group of hard-right Republicans led by Congressman Matt Gaetz of Florida pushed the motion late Monday to vote on removing McCarthy. Gaetz and his allies have been critical of McCarthy ever since he was chosen House Speaker in January. Things escalated after McCarthy reached a deal with Democrats a few days ago to avert a government shutdown.
Mr. Speaker, my friend from Oklahoma says that my colleagues and I who don't support Kevin McCarthy would plunge the House and the country into chaos. Chaos is Speaker McCarthy. Chaos is somebody who we cannot trust with their word. The one thing that the White House, House Democrats, and many of us on the conservative side of the Republican caucus would argue is that the thing we have in common, Kevin McCarthy said something to all of us at one point or another that he didn't really mean and never intended to live up to.
And McCarthy responded this way in a press conference later on.
You all know Matt Gaetz. You know it was personal. It had nothing to do about spending. It had nothing to do about everything he accused somebody of he was doing. It all was about getting attention from you.
The ousted speaker also criticized what he called a divide and constitutional problem in Congress.
In today's world, if you're sitting in Congress and you took a gamble to make sure government was still open, and eight people can throw you out as Speaker, and the Democrats who said they wanted to keep government open, I think you've got a real divide. I think you've got a real institutional problem.
McCarthy has said he won't seek to reclaim his post as Speaker. The Biden administration has hoped that the House will find a replacement as soon as possible. McCarthy's ouster poses problems both for Congress and for the government. That's because November 17th is the next deadline to fund the government or risk a federal shutdown. With the hard right Republicans taking a jab at the last deal between McCarthy and the Democrats to keep the government go on, the next House Speaker would need to figure out how to keep the party colleagues happy while at the same time prevent a government shutdown.
Our Washington correspondent Colin Campbell joined us earlier to give us more details on the ouster of the U.S. House Speaker.
Well, we have to remember that McCarthy won his position, or now his former position, by a very slim margin. He was always going to be controlled by the most extreme members of his party, because one of the stipulations that was made for him to become Speaker of the House was that only one member of the House could vote in opposition, or could call a vote in opposition to his leadership, which is what happened with Matt Gaetz, who was part of what many consider to be the MAGA movement, the Make America Great Again movement, which has been fueled and supported by former President Donald Trump. So once McCarthy made the deal with Democrats to keep the government going for another 45 days, Gaetz felt like he was overstepping his boundary and called a vote to remove him, to vacate the office of Speaker of the House, which he did quite successfully, in fact. So the ramifications here now is that the House will not be working for the next several days. It indicates broken government and the U.S. They plan to have a vote next week as to who will replace McCarthy. Some believe that Steve Scalise is the next person in line. Other people have talked about Jim Jordan. But it remains to be seen who will replace McCarthy.
The Iranian army has, for the first time, used artificial intelligence for suicide drones to hit targets on the second day of a joint maneuvers by different branches of the armed forces. A spokesman for the drills has been quoted as saying that the indigenously built drone named Arash successfully hit sea and land targets during the exercise. The Navy, the Ground Force, the Air Force, the Air Defense Force, and the Electronic Warfare Unit of the Army are taking part in the maneuvers. Around 200 drones will be used in the exercises that are being conducted from the Persian Gulf in the south to a western and northern regions. On Tuesday, unmanned surveillance and reconnaissance drones successfully carried out monitoring operations over land and maritime borders as well as international waters. Iran has developed a wide range of drones for defensive purposes over the years despite Western sanctions. Russia says it has intercepted and shot down 31 drones launched by Ukraine over the regions bordering Ukraine. Russia's defense ministry said the drones were spotted and intercepted over the regions of Belgorod, Bryansk, and Kursk. The ministry added that Russian jets also averted a Ukrainian attempt to penetrate into the Crimea region via sea. There were no immediate reports of potential casualties or damage from Ukraine's latest aerial and naval strikes. Meanwhile, the governor of Russia's southern region of Bryansk reported that Ukrainian forces fired cluster munitions but caused no casualties or damage. Ukraine has stepped up cross-border drone attacks since the country launched its counteroffensive in early June. Russia says it has repelled most of the attacks, downplaying their significance. And Germany's military assistance to Ukraine under growing criticism. Protesters have demonstrated in a public display of discontent with the arms supplies to Kiev. Well, the rallies were held in the cities of Berlin and Munich. The demonstrators said Germany's decision to send more weaponry to Ukraine risks escalation of the conflict with Russia. Some protesters demanded that Germany pull out of the NATO military alliance. Some said the United States is benefiting from Germany's intervention in the Russia-Ukraine war.
I'm mainly concerned with crisis intervention and resolving this armed conflict on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, there are trends in the militarization of Germany. After all, from a purely political point of view, Germany is right in the middle, and America is shamelessly taking advantage of that too, using citizens through media policy to perhaps ultimately use them for their own goals, and Ukrainian citizens were also exploited.
Germany is among Western countries that have provided Ukraine with a wide range of weapons since the war erupted in February 2022. Russia has repeatedly said the influx of Western arms will only prolong the war and add to the suffering of Ukrainians. Moscow has also warned the West that such arms transfers risk triggering a direct conflict with NATO. Well, joining us now from Berlin, we have author and politician Mr. Christoph Horstel, sir, welcome to the program. Give us your perspective on the recent demonstrations that are taking place in Germany. Do you think that this could be a reflection of how many European countries and European citizens feel about the Ukraine war right now?
Certainly, and it was not only Berlin and Munich where the demonstrations took place, but in 20 more cities in Germany, smaller or larger groups. And there's a consensus among the otherwise multiply divided opposition that weapons to Ukraine are detrimental to peace in Europe, that weapons to Ukraine in fact fosters war and cannot help to end it. And that logic is very simple and very clear, and it applies to a huge part of the population, which is in fact a little tired of demonstrating through the last 3 years, time and again, day and again, in so many cities. So October 3rd, National German Day, was a day of rallying again also in this regard. And let me give you the figures. There 8.36 billion euros German weapons exports to Ukraine last year, and 8.76 this year alone. So we have raised sharply, and one-third of our weapons exports go to Ukraine nowadays, and that's a very, very bad development.
Mr. Horsell, we already know how severely Europe has been affected by the Ukraine conflict as opposed to the United States. The main question here is, what's the end game for Europe here?
We have a very interesting development, let me tell you this. The formerly leading German general, army chief, General Kujat, and three other important guys, head of the Munich Security Conference, Horst Teltschik, two professors, one of them the son of former German Chancellor Willy Brandt, have jointly put forward a pretty good peace proposal. And that peace proposal, imagine that, is being totally sidelined and not even mentioned by our big cartel and liar media. That's a very serious sign how democracy is deteriorating. And if I want to meet that General Kujat, I'm not allowed to. We can only talk over the phone. That was the last thing he told me quarter of a year ago. So that is the situation in Germany right now. We have clear-cut oppression of news, clear-cut oppression of people, and people who are talking facts for the Russian intervention in Ukraine are being prosecuted by the law and fined thousands of euros as punishment. That's the situation. Europe's democracies are going down, and the people, they are rising up slowly, but they are doing it against the war in Ukraine.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Christoph Horsell, joining us from Berlin. Moving on, Britain's National Health Service leaders have expressed concerns over the ongoing strike action in England by junior doctors and consultants. For the first time, NHS bosses acknowledged that the 72-hour joint walkout is causing significant disruption and risk to patients. They highlighted the challenges in managing patients who require time-sensitive, urgent treatment, saying the strike brings all routine care to a near standstill. Hospitals also supported the cancellation of treatments and appointments for the second or third time. The industrial action, known as Christmas Day Cover, began on Monday over pay. This is the second strike action by doctors in over the past 2 weeks. On Tuesday, radiographers also joined them and walked out of jobs for a day. Meanwhile, members of the British Medical Association are taking part in a rally in Manchester, urging a fair pay deal.
We'll negotiate with any party in government. A change of government will not end this dispute. A fair pay deal will. We'll speak to the Tories, we'll speak to Labour, we'll speak to Lib Dems, we'll speak to anyone who is willing to value doctors and aim to actually retain them. The goal of government should not be just to end strikes. It should be to keep doctors in the NHS, to help with retention, with recruitment, to have a credible workforce plan that delivers for patients, and they're failing on every single aspect.
BMA members demanded significant pay rise for all doctors to combat 26% pay cut over the past 15 years. They also expressed concerns about the ongoing trend of doctors leaving for countries such as Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and Ireland. Britain has been rocked by months of nationwide strikes, with government employees in all sectors demanding higher wages in line with rising inflation. Said Puruzan London says the ongoing strikes are not the only reason behind the chaotic situation that the NHS is facing.
What's happened this time is we have seen junior doctors and consultants, those are senior doctors, taking joint industrial action, and that, of course, has led to a bigger impact on the NHS than the previous ones. We have seen up to a million cancellations of appointments and surgeries as a result over the past 10 months. The waiting list, of course, has gone up as well. The government, of course, has been trying to blame all of this on the strikes, whereas it is public knowledge that even before the pandemic, the NHS waiting list had risen to 7.2 million. And over the past few years since, it has gone up to 7.7 million. One of the promises of the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, has been to NHS waiting lists. That hasn't happened. Even as early as this morning, him and his Secretary of Health, Steve Barclay, in Manchester, where the Tory Party annual conference is ongoing, have been blaming the doctors for the rise in the number of people having to wait for surgeries. Examples of people suffering as a result are plenty. One person talking to the media here saying that she was suffering from gallbladder stones, that she was throwing up left, right, and center, and that she eventually had to take out a loan to carry out some kind of surgery, or keyhole surgery perhaps, on to take out her gallbladder stones, because she was told by the NHS that they had already canceled so many appointments that hers would probably be one and not get her surgery done anytime soon. She'd probably have to wait a year for that to happen, something she didn't want to do.
October 3rd marks the 8th anniversary of one of the most horrific attacks on a medical facility in recent history. Back in 2015, U.S. warplanes heavily bombed a trauma hospital run by Doctors Without Borders in Afghanistan's northern city of Kunduz, killing 42 people. Our correspondent Rahmatullah Bahman reports from Kabul.
The MSF hospital in Kunduz was hit by a barrage of U.S. airstrikes on October 3rd, 2015. For nearly an hour, the hospital was under fire as 211 shells rained down on the building. Among the 42 victims were patients, caretakers, and MSF staff members who were providing life-saving services to the wounded and patients.
The brutal attack on Kunduz Hospital not only devastated our people at that time, but it still haunts our nation, because it was an attack on innocent people, an attack that burned our medical professionals. Most of the targeted patients were the victims of the U.S. war. Our nation will never forget this war crime.
A hospital was mistakenly struck.
The U.S. initially denied targeting the hospital, but later admitted that it was a grave and tragic mistake.
Independently and impartially.
The MSF denounced the attack as a violation of international humanitarian law and the war crime, and demanded an independent investigation. However, no investigation or trial has ever been held for the incident. The attack on the MSF hospital was not an isolated incident. During its 20-year occupation of Afghanistan, the U.S. carried out more than 13,000 airstrikes across the country. The U.S. drone campaign alone claimed the lives of more than 4,000 people, many of them women and children. Afghan people have endured numerous atrocities committed by the U.S. forces on their land. They say the U.S. should be held accountable for their crimes in Afghanistan. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,645 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Iran Sat or Bat 5 and Intel Sat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Yani?
Bazaar.
Wherever you go, you are surrounded by real estate, whether they are houses, offices, shops, hotels, or education, or even healthcare facilities. These buildings are all the products of realty development. Property is a multi-business. It can involve buying land and building on it, renovating or improving, or converting property from one use to another. All of which adds higher value to the area. Property developers quite literally build the world around us, creating and changing the environments we inhabit and use on our daily basis.
Hello again and welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes markets, profits, industries and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week, we will take a look at Iran's housing and light construction industry. We want to uncover how this market is doing and what contributions it is making to living standards along with the economy. Time to light up today's Bazaar.
In order to become more familiar with the activities of light construction in Iran, we decided to visit a real estate developer in the capital city, Tehran. Nexa Group was established over a decade ago and is a known name in the construction industry. Essentially, it develops luxury properties for residential purposes. In a nutshell, a developer adds value to land or property. What sets this company apart from other developers is its choice of cream-of-the-crop architects who are highly creative, innovative, and experienced in the field of design. Clients who have land they wish to develop can seek the services of this contractor. This company then enters a contract with the owner and begins the process of vetting architects for designing its buildings. In recent years, several competitions have been held by this developer for residential projects. The winning design that meets the high standards of this company and its clients is awarded the project. But that's not all. This company also has a vast network of highly specialized subcontractors to take care of other aspects of construction, such as structure engineering, excavators, and so on. Among its many activities, this developer provides building management services. Such services include maintenance of plumbing, electrical, and mechanical installations of the building.
There are several different types of property development. Some are large scale, meaning that several lots of land are being developed into a single plot. These types of developments can be subdivided and sold individually or as a whole. There are also developments for commercial and sports uses, such as shopping centers and stadiums. Ooh, I like the sound of this.
Projects at this company range from low to medium density residential buildings. This developer also pays particular attention to designing buildings that are environmentally friendly. Most of its buildings are constructed following green practices that also elevate the living standards and quality of experience of its end users. One of its most recent residential projects is called Phoenix. What is most unique about this building is that it was designed based on the traditional 9-square method of Iranian architecture. This green building incorporates the needs of people during the coronavirus pandemic, which includes spaces for working from home. Large investments are made in real estate development each day, but adding value to the property, such as luxury structures with numerous amenities, are what really drive profits. And this company is ready to work with foreign investors and export its services along these lines. One of the competitive advantages of this developer, relative to others in the country, are its innovative and exceptional designs that gain the attention of clients and customers. Its luxury developments are geared to entice customers with more accommodations, higher-end options that integrate an entire lifestyle, and an elevated culture of living. The quality of its work has increased competition in the domestic market, making its buildings a must-have among customers. This property developer also has a unique view of the US-imposed sanctions, which has helped the company thrive throughout the years.
Iran has a growing population of around 85 million people, and the majority of the population is still young. But as time goes by, this population will age as they start families. With this in mind, many of them are embarking on the journey of purchasing homes. And for this to become possible, more housing units need to be constructed to meet this growing need.
The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development estimates that the per capita of housing for each Iranian is around 200 square meters. This means that 17 billion square meters of buildable land is needed to house every Iranian. According to the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the annual demand for homes stands at 900,000 units. In more general terms, according to the Ministry of Housing, some 10 million units are currently needed. This is while the average annual production volume for homes is around 300,000 units. So around 1 million residential units need to be built each year to satisfy this demand. Figures from the Statistics Center of Iran show construction of housing increased by nearly 40% last year. Data from the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development show municipalities issue an average of 350,000 residential construction permits each year. Of this amount, roughly 70% lead to construction. However, experts say this is not nearly enough to meet annual housing demands. Last year, the housing construction market saw a slump in completing projects. This was mainly due to the jump in land prices and construction materials that deepened the housing recession. The Ministry of Roads and Urban Development says housing prices have increased by 200% over the last 5 years. This has increased the purchase parity, making some vulnerable groups unable to buy a home.
It might be interesting to know that this issue has gathered the attention of the government for some time now. The government has implemented initiatives to help people purchase homes. One of these initiatives was to increase the amount of bank loans for first home buyers. Several other plans are also underway, such as the vacant house tax plan, to increase the amount of available homes.
President Ibrahim Raisi has pledged to build 1 million residential units each year for the next 4 years. This scheme was presented to address and prevent a housing shortage in the country. The Building Contractors Association says planning, execution, and building material is available. It emphasized that with large investments and land allocation, this plan can easily go forward. But authorities contend that infrastructure such as electricity and water connectivity requires more planning. Government officials also say wrinkles in the financial model for this project still need to be ironed out. Iran is entirely self-sufficient when it comes to construction material, according to the Ministry of Industry, Mining and Trade. Steel, glass, and cement is produced in abundance in the country. In fact, the surplus of these items are exported to several countries around the world. Meanwhile, the light construction industry in Iran is booming amid a long housing recession. New spaces and innovative designs that incorporate the needs of people are being built. Homes are not just a place to live, they are increasingly being seen as a source of capital and a place to increase the quality of living standards. There is also a growing trend towards designing sustainable buildings that reduce emissions and negative environmental impacts. All these achievements make this industry a promising one with a bright future. It is said nearly 70% of the world's protein comes from animal sources. While the plant-based trend is popular for the time being, meat is here to stay. Protein is also a brain food, vital for neurological and other bodily functions. Moreover, globally, the relationship between humans and livestock is fascinating. It has transcended time and space. Yet, despite all the world's technological and scientific accomplishments, mankind has failed to replicate livestock's exact contributions to food, clothing, and even energy. Last time, we visited Khazai Agricultural and Livestock Breeding Complex and explored their agricultural and cultivation units. This time, we will look at their advanced animal husbandry divisions and what led them to livestock rearing. To begin with, it all starts from the soil. Over time, the ground needs constant enrichment for high-yield harvests. After this company shifted to knowledge-based potato cultivation, it realized the best way to prepare the farmlands for the next round of planting was to employ the help of sheep. This company has around 2,400 hectares of farmland, and fertilizing this much land becomes a mammoth task. So, it decided to bring in the heavyweights of the fertilizing sector and started its cattle breeding unit. And as a result, it also launched its animal feed production facility, where they scientifically formulate feed and test ingredients for the best quality. As the cows are allowed to roam the lands periodically and are fed high-quality food, the dairy and meat they produce are also very nutritious. They have thousands of Holstein cattle at their rearing unit, and the milk produced is rigorously tested. Typically, livestock is fitted with digital tags. This is the animal's profile, which can be modified or added according to the animal's examination. They also serve as an identity card so caretakers can keep track of each animal's health and other features. This is also important information for veterinarians and the animal's products, which are further examined in advanced labs. Each animal born or brought to the facility is given a digital tag after a lab examination. This company's advanced veterinary and genetic lab complex carries out essential functions. It's worth mentioning that one of its labs is mainly dedicated to testing cows and their milk. Here, milk is tested for its microbial load. This usually involves a standard plate count, which determines the total number of bacteria in a sample. These results are then used to determine the grade of milk. It might be interesting to know that this company has received numerous awards for being the best model cattle breeder in the province and the country. These titles were granted based on meeting nearly 40 standards of the Ministry of Agriculture. Such achievements were made possible by dozens of expert staff employed at this company. Its other laboratory is dedicated to raising sheep. At this facility, sheep are genetically selected for specific characteristics. They are also genetically bred to produce twins and sometimes triplets. This company has never stopped eyeing the future.
It plans to expand its facilities further while incorporating new technology and applying the latest science to increase the quality of its products.
In 2019 was considered the golden period for red meat production in the country. Since then, production has grown each year, primarily because of the removal of an export ban. 3 years ago, Iran imported large amounts of meat to supply domestic needs, while domestic meat production was operating at full capacity. The ban was implemented to stabilize the market and support local production.
Iran's Livestock Exporters National Assembly estimates domestic needs for red meat at around 60 million heads of light livestock annually. Last year, this number was 72 million, which is well above average. This meant 12 million light livestock were ready for culling and exports. The Ministry of Agriculture puts red meat's domestic per capita consumption at over 12 kilograms, with lamb being the most popular red meat. This year, the National Statistical Center, or SCI, reported red meat production stood at nearly 51,000 tons in the month of May alone. Based on the SCI figures, over 1.3 million livestock holding farms are spread across the country. 54% of these farm small livestock and 26% are dedicated to large livestock husbandry. The remaining 20% farms both large and small livestock. The meat industry in Iran is worth some $2 billion. But not all livestock are raised for meat. They are also reared for their milk. Based on the SCI, Iran annually produces nearly 9 million tons of raw milk. 70% of this amount is produced on industrial farms, and the rest comes from traditional dairy farms. Going off of figures from Iran's Customs Administration, on average, roughly 800,000 tons of raw milk are exported annually, valued at around $800 million. All things considered, Iran's livestock industry is booming and is an excellent place for investors who will see quick returns and profit.
Now it's that time of the show for me to step aside for several minutes because my good friend and colleague has another awesome field report lined up for you. Take it away.
The basis of the steel industry is iron ore. It's courtesy of this critical raw material that steel is all around us. In the beneficiation process, the gangue minerals, or the mineral matter of no value that occurs with the metallic ore, is removed from the mineral substance and iron ore concentrate is produced. The concentrate is then shipped from mining plants as a bulk commodity by rail.
Hi again. The wagons carrying the iron ore concentrate have reached their destination. What happens at this stage is that through a gargantuan machine, they are overturned. This is called a wagon tippler. What it does is that it tips the wagons. It retains the wagons from the top and it overturns them. First, the wagons are detached from other wagons and then they're lifted over here. And look at those arms. Look at those arms, how gigantic they are. And now they're going to retain the wagon, overturn it to empty its load into a container. From that container, the iron ore concentrate is going to be mixed. First, it's going to travel through some distance and it's going to be mixed with some additives to be fed into the pelletizing process.
In this week's feature program, we visited Chodormalu Industrial Facility located in the center of Iran, Yazd province. The iron ore concentrate must be pelletized for use in iron and steel making. In summary, pelletizing is achieved by combining the iron ore with water and a specific binder, which is then rolled up in a balling drum to produce relatively uniform pellets, which can then be easily handled in downstream processes.
And here we are. The powder is the iron ore concentrate now mixed with some additive. It is now fed into large discs. In this industrial complex, everything is just enormous. This is called the pelleting disc. It's really huge. Now what happens here is through the use of centrifugal force, the powder gets compressed and it's just pushed to to the edges of this disc, and after the powder completes a couple rotation, and as it grows in size, then it forms the pellets, and once it is just large enough, it will exit the rotation because of that centrifugal force, and it moves over to the conveyor belt, and it's now time for grading. Now, those particles that are just perfect in size and shape, they will move on to travel over to the kiln, where the content moisture is removed and sintering takes place, so the iron pellet now gets hardened, and after that, cooling takes place. Now, stay with us for more.
Chotormalu's pelletizing plant, with a production capacity of 3.4 million tons per year, employs 500 people directly and another 3,000 indirectly. The iron ore pellets will be transferred to stackers and are piled in an area which can store 300,000 tons of pellets.
Fe2O3, I don't know how familiar you are with chemistry and the chemical reactions and the periodic table, but anyway, at this stage of the process, Fe2O3 is going to be turned into Fe through a process that is called direct reduction of iron. And this process is done by three main stages. The first stage occurs at ball furnace. The pellets are poured into the furnace. And what happens inside the furnace is two gases are going to hit the pellets. The gases are carbon monoxide and molecular hydrogen. They're extracted from natural gas through a process that is called reformation. And two gases are going to hit the pellets, and through three chemical reactions, Fe2O3 is going to turn into Fe, which is called the reduced iron, or also sponge iron because of its high porosity. Now, this process can be done in two different ways. One is called hot direct reduction of iron, and the other one is called cold direct reduction of iron. Now, I'm going to move on to the next and the final stage, steel production.
Hot direct reduced iron, or HDRI, is DRI that is transported hot directly from the reduction furnace into an electric arc furnace, thereby saving energy. Whereas cold DRI is the one that is cooled and stored before being charged to a furnace. Well, on the face of it, there's no reason for facilities to even consider cold DRI, but in reality, it's not really that simple. The development of mankind would have been impossible but for steel. It fueled the Industrial Revolution and remains the backbone of modern industrialized economies. The process continues with primary steelmaking, which is done via electric arc furnace at Chotormalu, and then moves on to secondary steelmaking, which involves treating, continuous casting, and shaping.
The final product is made, the steel billet, and you can tell how hot it is in here. Well, the process here starts with the electric arc furnace. It melts the sponge iron that I talked about earlier. And what happens next is that we need some ladles. Ladles are containers. They're going to contain the molten material. Then the ladles are taken over some molds. Molds are going to carry the molten material. And as the molten material is carried over some distance, it solidifies into the final product, which is the steel billet. Now, this complex is really huge. Everything inside it is gigantic. And I've been with you from the very beginning of this process, the iron concentrate, to the very end.
Thanks for that educational adventure once again. Well, that covers our show for today. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next Bazaar.
English radio.
a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. We are still looking at children from an Islamic perspective, obviously, and what are the requirements that we have to fulfill when it comes to the child. So we were saying that even before we think of making a child, we have to even think of the times where parents, the husband and the wife, have to, if they want to have a child, they must decide even on the time when it is a good time for them to come next to each other and be intimate to bring a child forth. Imam Salih Salamullah alayhi said, لا جامع في أول الشهر ولا في وسطه ولا في آخره. That when it comes to the month, and obviously we're talking about the calendar, lunar month, okay? He says, don't come close to your wife on the first of it, middle of it, and the end of it. These are bad times for thinking of having a baby. Then let him submit or let him accept the fact that if he has a miscarriage child, this is the reason. If parents want to prevent their children being miscarried, in the first place, they need to think of the time, okay, to avoid. And then he says, or if he comes to life and he is not miscarried, then he almost would be an insane person. For those who have a touch of insanity, like impaired mentally, is the fact that he says because they were born in the beginning of the month, or the middle of the month, or the end of the month. When I say born, I mean like their, you know, initial birth, not the actual birth. The Imam saying when it comes to times, take times seriously. There are good times, there are bad times. This is among the bad times. When it comes to good times, for example, Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi himself says, يُسْتَحَبُّ لِلْرَجُلْ أَنْ يَأْتِ الرَّجُلْ أَهْلَهُ أَوَّلِ لَيْلَةٍ مِنْ شَهِ رَمَضَانِ. For example, the first night of the month of Ramadan is a highly recommended mustahab night for a person to become close to his spouse. So we have to protect our children from deformities. We have to protect them from impurities, from disabilities, from everything. And that sometimes even starts before the, you know, birth itself. So we have to go that far. And also, when we have children, we have to make sure that they are always clean. They've always been taken care of. Even the Prophet says, when it comes to your children, make sure you bathe them, make sure you wash them, because once they remain on that state of filth, Shaitan, he smells that filth. And then he comes and he tries to hurt kids and he scares them off. And, you know, some children always scared and thinking they feel things and they see things and they hear things. And especially with kids who are dirty. So the Prophet says, try to avoid Shaitan annoying and bothering your children by keeping them clean. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes.
یه جلدش هی مفاتیح الجنان است چه فرون دماغ و صاحب داره فرون روان
One volume, the present volume, مفاتیح الجنان, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc.
یه جلدش کم داره و اون اینه که فرون درختکاری اینجا کم صاحب داره دعا هم داره ثواب هم داره
But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree.
امام اونطوری که اینو گفته بودم گفته دی اون امامی که گفته اگر روزه بگیری ثواب داره همون امام گفته که اگر درخت بکاری اون ثواب داره
امام has mentioned both of these subjects. The very imam who has stressed out the reward for praying has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
So we were saying that we need to maintain the health of our children before birth, after birth. And in the same way that we take care of our children physically, make sure that they are clean once they come to this world, they come in and then we bathe them and then we circumcise them, we also have to take care of their spiritual aspects as well. And that's why in Islam we've been asked to recite Adhan in the right ear of the child and Iqama in the left ear of the child. And obviously this is, you know, not just something that we made up. Rather, this is the instruction of the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, where he said to Amir al-Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib alayhi salam, and he said, Ya Ali, if you have a child, either from yours or from your servants, فَأَذِّن فِي أُذُنِهِ الْيُمْنَى Then do recite the adhan in the right ear. وَأَقِمْ فِي الْيُسْرَى And do recite the iqama in the left. For shaitan will not be able to harm or tempt that child. وَقَالَ صَلَى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمْ يَا عَلِي So this is another instruction from the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam to the imam. It's like when you come close to your wife before you become intimate with your wife, say, Oh Allah, please avoid me the shaitan and the, you know, everything that has to do with shaitan as long as you sustain me. فَإِنْ قَضَى أَنْ يَكُونَ بَيْنَكُمَا وَلَدٌ لَمْ يَضَرُهُ الشَّيْطَانُ أَبَدًا And if it happened that at this night a child would be born, then shaitan would not be able to harm. I mean, obviously, harm, we're talking about, you know, on the long run, or at least deviate that child in terms of whispering and stuff like that. I don't think that's something we can control, but at least in terms of not being deviated and then being misguided, inshallah, that should not happen. In this regard, also, we have to understand that Islamically, we also need to, when it comes to the food that we feed our children, also, we have restrictions and we have codes in this regard. Even when it comes to breastfeeding, that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says in the Quran, he needs to be breastfed for 2 years, and then the breastfeeding needs to stop. So this is something that we have to keep in mind. When it comes to the even reward of a child, that he says, the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he says, the mother, Allah will give her the reward of the one who is constantly fasting, constantly fighting for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala with her wealth and with herself. And that's when she's during pregnancy, when she's carrying the child, once she puts the child, and he says, no one knows how much reward does she get except Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So there is so much in this regard. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
Driving past walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Thank you. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.